people falling at your feet to do what you ask. These techniques can put your target in the frame of mind that will make getting what you want easier. One technique, ultimate voice, if mastered, does have very powerful effects. I once interviewed an NLP practitioner on a podcast who had this gift. When he spoke, it was as if you could not argue with him. He spoke with such control and technique that disagreement never even entered my mind. How can one master this technique? Using ultimate voice in social engineering. You can master the ultimate voice, but it takes a lot of practice. The ability to embed commands into normal conversation is a skill that is very useful when mastered. Ultimate voice is the ability to inject commands into people's minds without their knowledge. It can sound very artificial when new people try it, until enough practice makes them sound natural. Hypnotists often use this technique like so. You can feel yourself relaxing as you slip into calmness. This standard therapy phrase can be adapted to nearly any command you like. Put extra emphasis on the vowels in the words you want to accent. For example, yourself relaxing. Planet NLP at planetnlp.com offers 3 exercises that you can use to work on mastering this technique. 1. Move your voice around. Press your hand to your nose and say, nose. Concentrate on your nose as you repeat the word until you feel your nose vibrating. Now do the same exercise with your hand on your throat, saying, throat. Do the same on your chest, saying, chest. Keep practicing until you can really feel the vibration in each place. Notice how different each one sounds. 2. Use your range. Starting from a high note, say R. Keeping your mouth open, allow the note to drop down until your breath runs out. Repeat this exercise 10 times. Then, starting from a low note, say OO, allowing the note to rise until you cannot support the sound. Repeat this exercise 10 times. 3. Resonate. To use your voice correctly, it must resonate in the mask, which is the facial area surrounding the nose and mouth. There are 2 ways to practice resonating. Hum at whatever pitch is most comfortable for you. After you have found your pitch, then hum, followed immediately by the word ready. Do this a few times, then try the words now, 1, 2, and 3. Hum, and then allow your lips to vibrate. You are attempting to sound like a dove. Allow the pitch to rise and fall. This is very difficult if you have any tension in the jaw or face. Done correctly for a few minutes, your face will start to feel numb. After a couple of minutes using these methods, you should notice that your voice sounds crisper. If you find it hard to notice, record yourself and listen back to see how it sounds to you. The best way to improve is to spend about 5 minutes a day going through these exercises. Practice can help you learn to control this vocal technique. For example, I am generally a loud person. It seems like I don't have the ability to whisper. For me to control my tones, pitch, and volume, I need practice. Doing simple voice exercises like these can help you to control these voice characteristics. When you speak a sentence in which you want to include a hidden command and you want to lower your tone, being so subtle that the target doesn't realize it is imperative. Otherwise, you will alert that person's subconscious to trigger that something is amiss. If that occurs, he may pick up on your attempts, thereby shutting down your success. Like most things in social engineering, if a technique doesn't come naturally, practice is essential. Try this voice technique on your family and friends before you ever attempt it in an audit. From personal experience, when I first tried working on the ultimate voice techniques, I decided my goal was to embed commands into questions. This goal took a while to realize, but I would try simplistic things like, "Honey, what do you want to eat for dinner tonight? Steak or something else?" To conclude this section, Consider three things a social engineer should focus on when studying NLP. Vocal tones. As stated previously, the tones of your voice as well as the emphasis you put on certain words can change the whole meaning of a sentence. Using tone and emphasis, you can embed commands inside the subconscious mind of the target and allow the target to be more open to suggestion. Choose your words carefully. Learn to choose the words that have maximum impact. Match positive words with thoughts you want the target to think positively on, and negative words with those you want them to not think too highly of. This technique can also help the social engineer make a target more pliable. Create a list of command techniques that you can use in person or during a phone social engineering audit. Writing out and practicing command sentences will help you be able to recall and use them when in need. Most of all, practice. Controlling your tones, the words you choose, and how you say them is not an easy task. Practice can make this become second nature. NLP is a powerful topic, and much like microexpressions, this section only scratched the surface. Once you start to master the techniques in NLP, and the ability to read facial expressions, the next logical step is using these tools when interacting with a target. Next, this chapter analyzes the same tactics professional interrogators use. Interview and interrogation. Scenario 1. The door flies open and the perpetrator is noticeably nervous. Captain Bad Mood comes over and grabs the perp by the collar and slams him up against the wall. Getting about an inch from his face, he screams, "You'll tell me what I want to know, one way or another." Scenario 2. The bad guy is tied to a chair, already bruised from the previous 30 minutes of beatings, and as the interrogator grabs a pair of shiny pliers, he says, "You'll be talking in no time." Scenario 3. The perp is sitting in a chair, and two police officers enter the room. Calmly, they walk over to the table and set a file labeled "Evidence" down on the table. Before they sit down, they ask, "Do you need a coffee or a soda or something?" Cracking open an ice-cold soda, the first officer says, "Thanks for coming in today to help us out." Which of the preceding scenarios is a real-life interrogation? If you guessed the third one, you're right. It is how a real interrogation often goes. The first two have been portrayed in Hollywood movies and television series so much that many of us might think they are real. Outside of wartime scenarios and nations that do not ban the use of torture, the third scenario is most likely the way most interrogations begin. Rarely will you, as a social engineer, be in a situation where your target is waiting in a room for you to question him. With that in mind, you might ask, how can you use the tactics of professional interrogators and interviewers as a social engineer? Before going further, you should know the differences between an interrogation and an interview. The main difference between an interview and an interrogation is that an interview is in an atmosphere where the target is comfortable, both physically and psychologically, whereas in an interrogation, the goal is to put some pressure on the target by creating discomfort with the location or the questions asked, with the goal of gaining a confession or some knowledge the target possesses. Good interrogation is an art that you can master through experience. Many social engineering skills tie into being a good interrogator. Skills like elicitation, reading people, faces, and gestures, and having insight into human behavior can all help you become a legendary interrogator. Interviewing is a great skill to have, but as long as you can master the use of elicitation, you can become great at conducting interviews. Interrogation principles are used widely by successful social engineers. Putting a target in some psychological or physical discomfort to make gathering information from them easier is a skill most social engineers will spend a considerable time obtaining. Professional interrogation tactics. Before conducting any interview or interrogation, the social engineer will need to have done thorough information gathering. You must obtain as much information about the target, the company, the situation, and the details of each as possible. You must know how to approach a target, and what to say, and have in mind the path you will take with the target. Be careful to observe your surroundings as well as any changes in the target during the conversation and initial approach. One of the mistakes people new to interviewing and interrogation make is assuming every behavioral change has major meaning. A target's crossing her arms doesn't just mean a closed thought. She could also be cold, have underarm stink, or feel increased stress because of your questions. Watch not for only one sign. Watch for groups of signs. For example, a target crosses her arms, turns her head, and places her feet flat on the floor. This is a closed person. In other words, her body language indicates that she will divulge no more information or cooperate any longer. This door has been shut. A group of changes is the most important thing to watch for. So note the topic that was being discussed when the group of changes occurred. When starting an interview or interrogation, here are areas to observe for changes in the subject. Body posture: upright, slumped, leaning away. Skin color: pale, red, white, changes. Head position: upright, tilted, forward, back. Eyes: direction, openness. Hands and feet: movement, position, color. Mouth, lips: position, color, turned up, down. Primary sense: visual, aural, kinetic, feeling. Voice: pitch, rate, changes. Words: short, long, number of syllables, dysfunctions, pauses. Changes can indicate a question or line of questioning that needs more attention. For example, if the body posture is very relaxed when you ask, "Is Mr. CEO in? I would like to leave this information packet for his review," and then the body posture changes to a defensive posture, the torso pointing away and the eyes averting from looking at you, it may be a good indication that there is some untruth coming up, and further questioning might reveal the truth on this topic. Especially be sure to pay attention to the words a target uses. During the interview or interrogation process, pay particular attention to the subject's voice and how she answers questions. When you ask a question, how long does it take for her to answer? Blurting out answers quickly is believed to be a sign of practicing the answer. If she takes too long, she may be thinking up the answer. Response time depends on each person, though, because you have to determine what is natural for each person. Determining what is natural in the target, that is, the baseline, is not a small matter in a social engineering gig, and must be done very fast. Being very observant is the key to success with this skill. One method of creating a baseline involves asking questions that cause the suspect to access different parts of the brain. The interrogator asks non-threatening questions that require simple memory and questions that require creative thinking. Then, look for outward manifestation of his brain activating the memory center, such as microexpressions or body language cues. Another area to listen for is changes in verb tense and pronoun use. These shifts from past tense to future tense show areas you might want to investigate further. Switching tense can indicate deception. When a target switches tense, they may be fabricating an answer or thinking of a past statement to fabricate an answer. Further questioning can reveal the truth here also. Other areas of change you should listen to are the pitch of the voice. Is it going up with stress? And the speed of speaking. You don't have to learn how to do all this at the same time. The more practice you get actively listening and observing people, the easier it becomes for you to do without thinking. Professional interrogation is comprised of a number of parts. The following sections discuss each one in the context of how it pertains to a social engineer. Positive confrontation. In law enforcement, positive confrontation doesn't mean anything positive and good. On the contrary, It means the officer is telling the suspect he is the one who committed the crime. In other words, the officer is making a strong accusation. In a social engineering audit, though, you already have identified the target you want, and now you are going to tell, maybe using NLP tactics previously mentioned, that target that he will do what you are asking of him. You confront the target with the objective of starting him on the path to doing what you want. For example, a social engineer may approach the receptionist and ask, "Is Mr. CEO in? I have a meeting with him." Or, to use a positive confrontation angle, "I am here for my meeting with Mr. CEO at 11 a.m. Notice the second example positively states the meeting as being set, expected, and in such a way that you are sure it is happening. Theme development. Theme development in police interrogations is when the interrogator develops a story to postulate why the suspect may have committed a crime. Many times that story is relayed to the suspect during the interrogation. "So he insulted you, and you got so mad you grabbed the pipe and began hitting his windshield with it." While the officer is telling the story, he or his partner is watching the body language and micro-expressions of the suspect to see if there are any clues that would constitute agreement. Although social engineers can use this method, I also like to state that from a social engineering viewpoint, theme development needs to be seeing your pretext from the eyes of the target. What would a tech support rep, manager, or fellow employee look like, say, and do? How would he act? Theme development for social engineers is when your supporting evidence that is displayed feeds directly into the theme of who you are portraying. Your approach to a target, whether on the phone or in person, often involves a pretext of some sort. The pretext, of course, supports your storyline or theme. This part of the interrogation is where you offer reasons for support for the pretext. For example, in one audit, my pretext was very simple. I was just an employee who belonged. Armed with a trade publication I found in the trash, I followed a few employees through the door and past the security guard. As we approached the security guard, I began a very simple conversation with one of the employees about an article in the journal. All of my actions contributed to theme development. Your goal is to give the people who would normally stop you justification for not doing their job. The more you fit in, the less you stand out, and the easier it is for security guards and the like to justify not stopping you and letting you in. Handling denials and overcoming objections. Whether on the phone or in person, what is the plan of action if you are denied access to the place or information you're seeking? I like to call these conversation stoppers. People use them with salespeople all the time. "I'm not interested. I don't have time right now. I was just leaving." Whatever flavor of stopper targets throw out, you must have a plan to overcome it and handle the denial of access. I like to preemptively dismiss objections I feel the situation warrants. When I was in sales, I worked with a man named Tony who had a tactic that involved knocking on a door and introducing himself, and without pausing saying, "I know you might want to say you're not interested, but before you do, can you answer this one question? Is 5 minutes of your time worth $500? At this point, the person was much less likely to say, "I'm not interested." By diminishing the possibility of denial and following up with a question, Tony was able to get the target to think about something else besides her objection. In a social engineering engagement, you can't walk up to the security guard and say, "I know you don't want to let strange people in the door, but..." because it would raise way too much suspicion. Using this methodology to overcome objections is much more complex for social engineers. You have to think about what objections might arise and organize your theme, story, dress, and person to preempt those objections. Yet you still have to have a good answer to give for when objections come up. You can't just run out the door or hang up the phone. A good exit strategy enables you to come back to attack later on. An exit strategy can be as simple as, "Well, ma'am, I'm sorry you won't let me in to see Mr. Smith. I know he will be greatly disappointed because he was expecting me, but I will give him a call later and set up another appointment. Keeping the target's attention. If you handled your social engineering move correctly up to this point and you are in front of the target, then the target may start to think about what would happen if she does not allow access, take the file, or do what you are asking. You need to feed off that inherent fear and use it to continue to move the target to your goal. A few short statements like, "Thank you for your help. I was so nervous about this interview that I obviously put the wrong date down on the calendar. I hope that Mrs. HR manager is someplace warmer than here." Allow for a response, then continue. "I want to thank you for your help. When will she be back so I can call to make another appointment?" Presenting an alternate route. When you are interrogating the target in a social engineering audit, the possibility exists that your first path will not be greeted with smiles. So having a lesser but just as effective path of action ready is a good idea. Maybe you have used all these tactics to try to get Sally, the receptionist, to let you in to see Mr. Smith. The tactics are all failing, and you are being shut down. You should have an alternative path prepared, such as, "Sally, I appreciate you have to make sure things are done by appointment only. I am just not sure when I will be back through the area. Can I leave you with this CD of information for Mr. Smith, and then I can follow up with a phone call tomorrow to see whether he will set up an appointment?" Having a few CDs prepared with some maliciously encoded PDFs can help to make this path a reality, as well as having practiced and then using interrogation tactics quickly. A contact I have sent me a document entitled Interview and Interrogation that is used by the Department of Defense to train its staff in passing the polygraph. It outlines the different approaches that professional interrogators use, and I have provided them here. Looking at these different approaches, one can learn a lot about different methods that might make sense for a social engineer. Direct approach. The interrogator assumes an air of confidence in this approach. The attitude and manner of the interrogator rules out that the suspect is innocent at all. Without threatening, the interrogator disarms the suspect by telling him anyone else would have done the same thing. As a social engineer, you can utilize this approach depending on your pretext. Maybe you are management, a consultant, or another person who has power over the target. This means you must have an air of confidence and assume that the target owes you the response you seek. Indirect approach. The suspect is allowed to tell his side of the story in detail, and the interrogator looks for omissions, discrepancies, and distortions. The interrogator's job is to let the suspect know that the best course of action is to tell the truth. As a social engineer, you can use this approach by not approaching the target in any role, but maybe as an elicitation, a question designed to elicit information from the target. The social engineer can gather information from the target by letting him do most of the talking. A sympathetic approach. The DOD manual offers some excellent thoughts on this approach. The interrogator drops his voice and talks in a lower, quieter tone that gives the impression he is an understanding person. He sits close to the suspect and maybe puts his hand on the suspect's shoulder or pats him on the arm. Physical contact at the right time is very effective. The social engineer can use this approach in the very same manner as the interrogator. Maybe you overhear some employees complaining about the boss as you are waiting to tailgate in the door. Or maybe you have followed the target to a local bar and get into a conversation where you can show empathy to a situation. You can use this approach all around, and it is very effective. Emotional approach. This approach plays on the morals or emotions of the suspect. Questions such as, "What will your wife or kids think about this?" are used in this interrogation tactic. The thoughts that are aroused emotionally upset him and make him nervous. As these emotions manifest themselves, interrogators can capitalize on them. You can use this approach in a similar manner to the preceding, in which you play on a weakness identified in the target. In one engagement, I knew the target was partial to charities for children who suffer from cancer. Playing on those emotions, I was able to get the target to take an action he should not have taken, and it compromised his operation. The logical approach. This non-emotional approach presents strong evidence of guilt. The interrogator should sit erectly and businesslike, displaying confidence. You can use this matter-of-fact approach when presenting evidence of your legitimate reasons for being present. For example, such as being dressed and armed as an IT repairman, and having the air of confidence that you belong there. Aggressive approach. For an interrogator, a fine line exists between gathering information and infringing on the target's rights that must not be crossed. The voice should be raised, and the look and act should be aggressive, but the suspect's civil rights should never be violated. The social engineer auditor needs to keep this fine line in mind. As in the case of Hewlett-Packard, discussed in Chapter 4, being hired to social engineer a company does not give you the right to break civil laws. Most of the time, the company hiring you has no right to allow you to tap home phones, read personal emails, or invade people's privacy. Combination approach. One interrogator may combine two approaches to have maximum effect. This would be decided upon based on the suspect's personality. As a social engineer, you may use the same techniques to combine your attacks and approaches for maximum effect. For instance, after you discover some personal details about a target, such as their favorite local bar, you can approach the target and start a conversation. Such a tactic, especially when employed in a relaxed atmosphere, can go a long way toward opening people up. Indifferent approach. This approach is very interesting because the interrogator acts as if he does not need the confession because the case is solved. At this point, the interrogator may try manipulating the suspect into giving his side of the story. As a social engineer, you may not be able to use this approach unless caught. If you're caught in an area or situation you should not be in, you can act indifferent instead of afraid that you're caught. Acting indifferent can cause the person who caught you to not be alarmed as much and afford you an opportunity to dispel any worries. Kevin Mitnick was great at this technique. He had the ability to think quickly on his feet. Also, acting indifferent when he was in a precarious situation allowed him to get away with a lot. Face-saving approach. The interrogator should rationalize the offense, giving the suspect a way out and an excuse to confess and save face. An interrogator should not make the excuse so good, however, that the suspect can use it in court as a defense. A social engineer can really utilize this approach. An interrogator does not want to give someone too good an excuse, but a social engineer does. You want the excuse to be so good the target doesn't even need to think before rationalizing it as an excuse for complying with you. One approach is to say a higher level person asked you to be there. You can follow this up by saying, "I can understand how you might feel now, but I don't even want to imagine how upset Mr. Smith will be if I don't fix that massive email blunder before he returns on Monday." This approach gives the target the ability to save face and comply. Egotistical approach. This approach is all about pride. For it to work, you need a suspect who is very proud of an accomplishment. Bragging on good looks, intelligence, or the way the crime was performed may stroke his ego enough that he wants to confess to show that, indeed, he was that smart. In social engineering gigs, this method is often used. Playing up someone's accomplishments gets them to spill their deepest secrets, in the case of the U.S. nuclear engineer in China back in Chapter 3. Social engineers loaded the man with compliments, and he spilled the beans and divulged information he shouldn't have. Exaggeration approach. If an interrogator over-exaggerates the case facts, the suspect may admit to what was real. One example would be if an interrogator accuses a thief of wanting to commit rape and saying, "Why else would someone break into a bedroom in the middle of the night?" This often causes the suspect to admit to only wanting to steal and not commit rape. You can also use this approach by over-exaggerating the task you are there to perform. By over-exaggerating the reason for being there, you can give the target a reason for providing you lesser access. For example, you can say, "I know Mr. Smith wanted me to fix his computer personally because he lost a lot of data. But if you don't feel comfortable with that, I can potentially fix his problems from another computer in the office." Wedging the alibi. A suspect seldom confesses his transgressions all at once. Getting him to make minor admissions, such as he was on the site, owned the weapon in question, or owned a similar car, can move him toward admitting more and more, eventually leading to a complete confession. Maybe you get stopped at the door during a social engineering gig, and the gatekeeper refuses you access to the building. See whether you can gain access by using a line like this. "I understand Mr. Smith is busy and can't meet with me. Would you mind giving him this CD of information about our products, and I will follow up with a phone call later on, today or tomorrow?" It is a lesser admission, but nevertheless, would get, if not you, then one of your tools in the door. The end goal. To prepare to use proper interview or interrogation tactics, as a social engineer, you may want to answer a few questions of your own. I encourage you to write these down in a notepad, because doing so can help you prepare for your encounter with the target. Plus, writing down your answers makes them real and gives you a path to work on during the preparation for your interrogation. Answer these questions. Who? With whom is the interrogation or encounter being conducted? What role does he play? List names, titles, and other information about him that is relevant to the interrogation. What? Exactly what preparation has been done? And what is going to be your goal during the interrogation? You must have a definite aim. When? What is the time frame of the interrogation? What time of day or night? What are the circumstances at the business that leads to this decision about when to make your move? Is there a party you overheard about? Is it a time when a large portion of the employees are on vacation? Is it during lunchtime? Is it during the changing of the security staff? Where? What is the location of the interrogation? Are you going to be at the target's location? Are you tracking the person to his or her gym, local bar, or daycare? Where is the best place to try to obtain the information you need from the target? Why? People hear this question often enough from their kids, but it must be asked. What is the purpose of this interrogation? To make the target admit to the location of something? To make him give out information he should not? For you to gain access to a room or a server? How? What methods will you use in this interrogation? NLP? Embedded commands? Human buffer overflow? Discussed at the end of this chapter. Micro-expressions? Of course, in a criminal interrogation, the goal is confession to a crime. With interrogation as a social engineer, the goal is a confession of a different sort. You want people to feel comfortable giving you information, and using the interrogation tactics discussed earlier, you can make that easier to do. In the end, your social engineering interrogations should be like smooth interviews. However, a social engineer can use some other techniques to help while using interview and interrogation tactics on a target. Gesturing. Gestures have a wide variation due to the fact that they are very much culturally dependent. Unlike micro-expressions, which are universal, gestures from the United States can actually be insulting in other parts of the world or have no meaning at all. Here is an exercise to help you better understand gesturing differences. If you can, write down your answers to refer to in a few minutes. Depending on what culture you're from, the answers will be interesting to see. Write down what you think this gesture means, and whether it is rude in each case. Holding your palm facing upward, point at someone with your index finger and beckon to him. 2. Make a V sign with your index and middle fingers. 3. Sit with the soles of your feet showing. 4. Make the OK symbol with your fingers. 5. Wave a hand with your palm facing outward. 6. Nod your head up and down. If you wrote down your answers, compare them to some of the following interesting cultural differences. Number 1. In the U.S., this gesture simply means, come here. But in the Middle or Far East, Portugal, Spain, Latin America, Japan, Indonesia, and Hong Kong, beckoning someone this way is considered rude or insulting. Beckoning someone with the palms facing down and using all the fingers to beckon is more acceptable. Number 2. In the U.S., this gesture is a peace sign. But in Europe, it means victory. If you put the palm toward your face, it actually means shove it. Number 3. In the U.S., this is a comfortable way of sitting and doesn't denote any bad intent. Yet in other countries, such as Thailand, Japan, and France, as well as countries of the Middle and Near East, showing the soles of the feet demonstrates disrespect. Exposing the lowest and dirtiest part of your body is insulting. Number 4. In the U.S., this gesture means everything is okay. But in other parts of the world, it has a much different meaning. In Brazil and Germany, it is an obscene gesture. In Japan, it means money. And in France, it means worthless. Number 5. In the U.S., this is a greeting, a way to say hello or goodbye. In Europe, it can mean no. And in Nigeria, it is a serious insult. Number 6. In the U.S., nodding your head is a way of saying yes. The same is true for many places, but in some areas, such as Bulgaria or Greece, it is a way of saying no. These are just a few examples of gestures that can have varying meanings depending on where you are and who you are talking to. Understanding the different meanings of gestures is important because communication is often much more than what is said. This section is intended to show that during an interrogation with a target, not only can these principles be observed, but they can also be utilized to manipulate the target into a path of least resistance. Understanding the culture of the targets. Your approach will also keep you from performing a gesture that can have undesirable results. Anchoring. Gestures can have some powerful effects when used properly. Some of these principles come from the study of NLP, but can have a lot of power when you're trying to set your target's mind on a path you control. One such method is anchoring, which is a method of linking statements of a like kind with a certain gesture. For example, if you're talking to a target and he describes something positive and good, you can repeat it back while gesturing with your right hand only. If something is bad, you can gesture with your left hand only. After doing this gesture a few times, you begin to anchor in your target's mind that right-handed gestures are linked to good things. Salespeople use this method to further solidify their product or their service is excellent, and the competitor's is not. Some politicians use this method to anchor positive thoughts, or thoughts they want their audience to think of as positive, with certain gestures. Bill Clinton was a great example of someone who understood this. Mirroring. Another tactic when it comes to gestures is called mirroring, where you try to match your gestures to the personality of the target. Of course, this is not as easy as it sounds. But what can you discern about the target from just observation? Is she timid? Is she loud and outgoing? If you approach a timid person with large, loud gestures, you will surely scare her off and potentially ruin your chances of making your social engineering attempt. By the same token, if you are more timid, you will need to mirror louder gestures when dealing with louder people. Mirroring not only involves mimicking your target's body language, but also using gestures that make it easy for a person to listen to you. You can take this principle to another level. Seeing gestures a target is familiar with can be comforting to him or her. However, You must strike a careful balance, because if your target has a particular gesture he seems to be using a lot, and you use it exactly the same way, then you run the risk of irritating him. You want to mirror him, but not exactly. If the target ends a thought by placing his hand on his chin, you can end a thought by placing your hand on another part of your face, or raise a finger to tap your chin a couple of times. The following section analyzes the topic of gesturing a bit further by discussing the importance of the position and placement of a target's arms and hands. Arm and hand placement. Law enforcement officers are trained to notice the placement and position of the arms and hands during both interviews and interrogations. An increase in movement or fidgeting during an interrogation can show an increase in stress levels, signifying that the interrogation is having the desired effect. This is, of course, in a law enforcement setting. In a social engineering setting, you would watch for these same signs, but signs of stress in the target might indicate you need to back off, unless your goal is to stress him or her out. Certain law enforcement officers are taught to pay attention to a couple of signs. Elbows generally hang free next to the body when a person is relaxed. When you feel threatened or scared, your body's natural reaction is to pull the elbows in toward the rib cage. In essence, this position serves as a layer of protection to one's internal organs that might be threatened. Hand. Gestures often can be very revealing, too. A target may describe something with his hands that he doesn't say. For example, in a crime interrogation, suspects may make a gesture that describes the activity, that is, strangling, shooting, stabbing, and so on, but just say the word crime or incident. Watching for the subtle hand gestures your target may use is important. Taking note of signs that the target is feeling threatened or scared can help you to adjust and put them back at ease. When you approach a target, much can be said with body language and arm and hand gestures before the first word is even spoken. Other gestures to take notice of include: an open palm might indicate sincerity. Steepled fingers could indicate the person feels authoritative. Tapping or drumming fingers can indicate anxiety. Touching the face can indicate thought. Touching hair can indicate insecurity. And touching ears can indicate indecisiveness. Taking note of these gestures in your target can tell you a lot about his mindset. On the other hand, performing these gestures can help you portray one of these images, if this is your pretext. From a social engineering standpoint, here are a few key points about gestures which can be imperative if you are a big gesturer like me. No one should remember the gesture, but only the message attached to it. If people tend to say, "Wow, that guy gestures a lot," you need to calm down a bit. The message is important, not the gesture. Avoid monotony. Even in gestures, you can be so bland, boring, and repetitive that the gesture can adjust the target's perception of you to be negative. Be very concerned about exhibiting anxiety, such as tapping or drumming your fingers or making jerky movements. They tell the target you are nervous and detract from your message. Too much is too bad. Over-gesturing can also detract from your message. Remember that using facial expressions, gestures, and posture is a package deal. They must all blend together, be balanced, and support your pretext. As good as all this information is, one tool in the interrogation arsenal can make or break the way you use this knowledge in your social engineering skills. Listening your way to success. Probably not one skill exists that can be as encompassing as listening. Listening is a major part of being a social engineer. What you have to realize is a major difference exists between hearing and listening. It is commonly believed that people retain much less than 50% of what they hear. That means if you are talking to a person for 10 minutes, he will remember only a few minutes of what you said. Although people eke through life this way, it is not acceptable for a social engineer. Often, the little things that are said can make or break how successful you are in a social engineering endeavor. This area is where massively improving your listening skills comes in. And not just listening to what is said, but how it is said, when it is said, and with what emotion. All of these factors contribute to your perception of the information relayed. Being a good listener might sound easy, but when you are in the heat of the moment, your end goal is to gain access to the server room, and you are listening to a story by a few employees out for a smoke break who you plan on following into the building, truly listening can be hard. Yet it is during these times you might want to really listen. Maybe Susan starts to complain about her manager in HR, Mr. Jones. She tells a story about how short he has been with her lately and how she is fed up with it. Then her fellow smoker, Beth, says, "Well, you should come over to the paradise of accounting. It is filled with jerks there, too." Maybe this just sounds like the complaining chatter of two tired and ticked off employees. Or is it more? You have both of their names, the names of their departments, and some idea of the general demeanor of some of the employees. This information can be very valuable later on if you need to provide proof of your validity for being inside the building. Often, the way someone says something can tell you a lot about the person. But applying this will require a lot of listening. Is the person angry, sad, or happy? Did she speed up or slow down in her delivery? Did she get emotional, or did his emotion trail off? Paying attention to these types of things can tell you a lot more than the words at times. So how can you become a great listener? The following steps can help you perfect your listening skills. These tips can assist you not only in social engineering, but also in life. And when applied to a social engineering audit, can make a world of difference. 1. Pay attention. Give your target your undue attention. Do not fiddle with your phone or other gadget. Do not drum or tap your fingers. Try to focus intently on what is being said, looking at the person speaking. Do this in a very inquisitive way, not in a scary, I want to stalk you way. Try hard not to think ahead and plan your next response. If you are planning your next response or rebuttal, you will not be focused, and you may miss something important or give the target the impression you don't really care. This can be very hard to control, so perfecting this tendency will take some serious work for most people. Also, try to not be distracted by environmental factors. Noise in the background or a small group laughing about something can shift your focus. Do not allow that to happen. Finally, pay close attention to what the speaker is not saying too. The body language, facial cues, and other aspects of communication should be listened to intently. 2. Provide proof you are listening. Be open and inviting with your body language and facial expressions. Nod once in a while, not too often, but often enough to let the target know you are there. You don't want to look like a bobblehead doll, but you want to let the target know you are with him. Don't forget the all-important smile. Smiling can tell the target you are with him mentally and you understand what he is saying. As with paying attention mentioned earlier, add smiles when appropriate. If the person is telling you her dog just died, nodding and smiling will most likely get you nowhere. 3. Provide valuable feedback. Letting your personal beliefs and experiences filter the message coming your way is all too common. If you do that, you may not truly hear what the speaker is saying. Be sure to ask relevant questions. If she is telling you about the blue sky, then you say, "So how blue was the sky?" will not be effective. Your question must show you have been actively listening and have the desire to gain a deeper understanding. Every now and then, mirroring or summarizing what you have heard can work well too. Don't recite the conversation like a book report, but recapping some of the main thoughts can help the target see you are in tune with the message. Do not interrupt. Not much more needs to be said on this tip. Interrupting your target shows a lack of concern for his feelings and stops the flow of thoughts. Letting him finish and then speaking is better. However, circumstances do exist where interrupting can be useful or even a tactic. If you want to see an example, watch the movie Sneakers. When Robert Redford is trying to gain access to a locked door that he must be buzzed into, he interrupts the doorman in a heated dispute over some delivery items. He does so a few times, eventually frustrating the doorman and causing him to unlock the door with no authorization. If you think it will get you somewhere, interrupting might be a good idea. Most of the time, however, it is not. 5. Respond appropriately. This is the pinnacle of good or bad listening skills. If you were focused on your rebuttal or next statement, or you were thinking about the very attractive blonde that just walked by, you might put your foot in your mouth. I was once training a group of people and was telling them some aspects of very detailed manipulation tactics. I could tell two guys were not listening. I put in a random thought like, "So then you bake the lion at 350 degrees for 15 minutes till crispy." The rest of the group broke out in laughter, and I turned to one of the two and said, "What do you think, John?" He responded with a blank stare and stuttered, "Yeah, sounds perfect." Do not ever do that to a target. It is a death blow to rapport, discussed later in this chapter. Be respectful, keep your emotions in check, and respond appropriately at all times when conversing with a target. Paying attention, providing proof, giving positive feedback, being careful to never interrupt, and responding appropriately can make or break you when it comes to listening. They especially come into play during extended social engineering engagements, such as when I had to interact with a gentleman at the Chamber of Commerce social gathering by meeting him at the bar and then talking to him about his business. Much of the information I was seeking would have been divulged in normal, mundane conversation. Make sure you practice these tips at home or the office before the time comes for the conversation to take place. You want good listening to become second nature as part of your arsenal of talents, not something you have to think about. Your own emotions are another aspect of listening you must take into account. For example, I was raised in a strict religious Italian family. I was taught that you didn't disrespect women, and I shudder to tell you of the one time I called my mom a disparaging name. I will tell you that it did not end too well for me. One day, many years after that incident, I was working an engagement and was talking with a guy from whom I was trying to obtain some information. I approached him in a social setting and we started a conversation. We started to talk about women he worked with, in a very inappropriate way. Being raised the way I was, I found a lot of anger boiling up inside me. I had a hard time containing those feelings, and it must have shown on my face and in my body language, leading to that particular vector being blown. In that failure, I learned a very valuable lesson. When it comes to listening during social engineering engagements, you must try your hardest not to let the built-in filters you have get in the way. Also, remember to react to the message, not the person. If you don't agree with the person's belief or stance, affording him or her dignity will go a long way in making that person feel comfortable with you. Even in situations where you might not agree, you can find something empathetic to say. For example, "This job stinks. They make me work this horrible shift and for low pay, too." Social engineer: "It sounds to me like you are overwhelmed by your situation here." Although you might be thinking, "Try harder," by responding this way, you let the target know you were listening, as well as empathizing with her plight in life. This technique is known as reflective responding. Reflective responding has some basic principles to it. Listen actively, as described earlier. When it's time to respond, be aware of your emotions. Knowing what you feel as the target is speaking can help you react appropriately. Repeat the content, not like a parrot, but in your words. Start your response with a non-committal phrase such as, it sounds like, it seems like, or it appears that. These phrases ease the message you are trying to deliver. If you need proof of this, the next time you get into an argument with your mate, boss, parents, or whomever, say, "You're mad at me because," and compare the person's reaction with what you get when you say, "It appears you are mad because of," instead. You will see which one is taken better. Reflective responding, used with active listening, is a very deadly force in the trust and rapport building skills arena. As you learn to listen better, and it becomes part of your nature, you will enhance your ability to react to the message you hear. A social engineer's goal is to gather information, gain access to some place or something you should not have access to, or cause the target to take an action he should not take. Thinking that you must be perfect at manipulation often stops people from learning and practicing great listening skills. But this is the exact reason you need to be a great listener. Consider these two scenarios. One of your neighbors comes over and asks whether you have time to help him with a project in his garage for about an hour. This neighbor has a dog that has gotten into your garbage a few times and tends to like the use of your yard as a bathroom. You are just about to sit down to relax at the end of a long day and watch some TV or read a book. Your childhood friend comes over and tells you that he needs some help moving some furniture. He just got a place about 5 miles from you and he can't get the couch up the stairs. You are just about to sit down and relax a bit. For which scenario are you more likely to put aside relaxing? Most people will put aside relaxing for the second scenario, but will come up with an excuse or a reason not to help out in the first scenario, or at least try to postpone it to another day when they are not busy. Why? People are very open and free with friends. When you feel comfortable with someone, you have no boundaries and will put aside your own wants and needs at times to help them out. One naturally trusts the message coming from a friend, whereas with the stranger, one might start to double-guess what's being said, trying to determine whether it is truthful or not. In the case of the relationship with the friend, this connection is called rapport. For years, rapport has only been talked about when it comes to salespeople, negotiators, and the like. Rapport isn't just for salespeople. It is a tool that anyone can use, especially the social engineer. If you are wondering how to build rapport instantly, then listen up. Building instant rapport. My former coworker Tony used to say that building rapport was more important than breathing. I don't really believe that to be true, but it does have a ring of truth in that rapport building is vital. Wikipedia defines rapport as one of the most important features or characteristics of unconscious human interaction. It is commonality of perspective, being in sync with, or being on the same wavelength as, the person with whom you are talking. Why is rapport discussed in this chapter? It is a key element in developing a relationship with any person. Without rapport, you are at an impasse. Within the psychological principles behind social engineering, rapport is one of the pillars. Before getting into aspects of how to use rapport as a social engineer, you must know how to build rapport. Building rapport is an important tool in a social engineer's arsenal. Imagine that you could make people you meet want to talk to you, want to tell you their life story, and want to confide in you. Have you ever met someone like that? Someone you met recently but feel totally at ease telling him or her very personal things? Many psychological reasons may play into why that may be the case. But the case may be that you and that person just had good rapport. The following sections outline important points about building rapport and how to use rapport in social engineering. Be genuine about wanting to get to know people. How important are people to you? Do you enjoy meeting new people? It is a mindset about life, not something that can be taught. The prerequisite to building rapport is liking people. You can see through fake interest. To be a good social engineer and to be able to use rapport, People need to be important to you. You must like people and enjoy interacting with them. You have to want to learn about people. People can see through fake smiles and fake interest. Developing a genuine interest in your target can go a long way toward building rapport. Take care with your appearance. You cannot change some things that may affect your interaction with others. Unfortunately, people can still hold your skin color, gender, or